improve your mental state. If you want a willpower quick fix, exercise is it. So the next time you're feeling too tired or short on time to work out, remember the bigger picture. Every workout you do replenishes your willpower and energy. Think of it as your secret weapon for staying on top of your game. Don't care how, I just want it now. I want the works. I want the whole works. Presents and prizes and sweets and surprises of all shapes and sizes. And now, don't care how, I want it now. Don't care how, I want it now. Those words were sung by Veruca and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and many people sing along every day, regardless of whether they realize it. The problem is that when we think about rewards, the longer we have to wait, the less desirable they become. Psychologists call this delay discounting, and it explains why, in the moment of having to make a decision regarding an immediate reward versus a future one, one bird or Big Mac in the hand can be worth an inordinately large number of other things in the bush. Whatever we can get right now tends to appear decidedly more valuable than whatever we have to wait for. This is why credit card companies make so much money, why fast food joints are far more profitable than gyms, and why people make some really poor life choices. While we're all susceptible to these types of behaviors, some people discount future rewards more than others. And the more someone engages in this behavior, the worse his self-control is and the more likely he is to behave impulsively and even have problems with addiction. What this boils down to is how much discomfort can you endure now to achieve a long-term goal? How well can you ignore immediate rewards and keep your eye on the bigger prize on the horizon? Fortunately, regardless of how infatuated we currently are with immediate gratification, we can favorably change our discount rates by simply changing how we view the nature of today's and tomorrow's rewards. For example, if I gave you a $200 check postdated a couple of months from now, and I then tried to buy it back for $100 today, would you accept the deal? Probably not. What if I gave you $100 now and tried to buy it back with the $200 postdated check? Would you make that deal? Again, probably not. Why is that? Simple. We don't want to lose something we have, even if we're going to gain something of greater value later. It's just human nature, and it's why we tend to gravitate toward choosing smaller, immediate rewards over larger, delayed ones. When you're hovering over it, a donut now sure feels a lot more desirable than some weight loss later. We can use this psychological quirk to help us pursue long-term goals instead of sabotage them. When you face a willpower challenge, if you think about the future reward first and how giving in now sacrifices progress toward or some part of it, research shows that you'll be less likely to discount the future and indulge. When you face the delicious prospect of binging on pizza, think first about how eating it gives up progress toward your long-term goal of the ideal weight or body composition, and it'll suddenly become much less appealing. Are you really willing to give up a week's worth of progress toward the body you've always desired for one measly binge meal? Let's all get fat and jump off bridges. How many times have you heard how few people exercise and eat enough fruits and vegetables, choosing to binge on TV and sugar and fat-laden foods instead? These types of statistics are supposed to scare us straight, but to those addicted to reruns and junk food, the data is music to their ears. It reminds them of the comforting reality that they're not alone, that everyone else is just like them. And if everyone is doing it, how wrong can it really be? You may not be one of those people, but don't think you're immune to the underlying psychological mechanisms. It's comforting to think that we singularly chart our own course in our lives, uninfluenced by how other people think and act, but it's simply not true. Extensive psychological and marketing research has shown that what others do, and even what we think they do, has a marked effect on our choices and behaviors, especially when the people we're observing are close to us. In the world of marketing, this effect is known as social proof, and it's a well-established principle used in myriad ways to influence us to buy. When we're not sure how to think or act, we tend to look at how other people think and act and follow along, even if subconsciously. Whenever we justify behaviors as acceptable because of all the other people doing it too, or because of how normal it is, we're appealing to social proof. We can pick up anything from temporary solutions to long-term habits this way, and both people we know and even people we see in movies can influence us. For example, having obese friends and family members dramatically increases your risk of becoming obese as well. The more a student believes that other students cheat on tests, the more likely he is to cheat, even if he's wrong in his estimates. And the more people believe others underreport income on their taxes, the more likely they are to cheat the IRS too. Research has demonstrated the contagious nature of habits and mindsets with many other behaviors, including drinking, smoking, using drugs, not getting enough sleep, and even feeling lonely and depressed. Because these things are able to spread from person to person to person, whom we keep as company has a much larger influence on our lives than most of us think. Even if drinking, smoking, or even binge eating isn't your thing, seeing others indulge in these activities can still influence you and encourage you to give in to your impulses as well. Seeing someone overspend might subconsciously justify your overeating. Hearing about someone skipping class might make you feel okay about skipping your workout. The silver lining, however, is that good behaviors and moods are contagious as well. If we hang around people who are generally goal-driven and happy with high levels of self-control, we too can catch these traits. Simply thinking about people with high levels of self-control, self-control role models, if you will, has been shown to increase willpower. So if you're struggling with sticking to your diet or exercise routine, you can make it easier on yourself by joining forces with someone else who is on the same path and thinking about how others have successfully dealt with these issues. You don't even have to physically make the journey together. Regular email check-ins can be enough to feed and feed on each other's success. It may also be wise to limit your exposure to instances of people failing your willpower challenges. Overeating and poo-pooing exercise, for example, as merely seeing others giving in can pique your appetite and help you find reasons to skip a workout too. That said, seeing others lose control doesn't have to weaken your resolve. In fact, it can strengthen it if you're mentally prepared to view such displays of self-indulgence as threats to your long-term goals, not tempting invitations. You can vaccinate yourself against these threats by simply spending a few minutes every day reviewing your goals and how you might be tempted to go astray. Imagine how the situation will play out. How will you be enticed? What specific actions or willpower strategies will you use to escape the trap? What will it feel like to succeed and stay strong? Research shows that reflecting on these things will strengthen your will and help you turn away from immediate gratification when necessary. Using the good to justify the bad. Have you ever told yourself that you were good when you did what you needed to do or didn't give in to temptation, but bad when you procrastinated or lost a battle with your impulses? Have you ever used good behavior as permission to be bad? Chances are you answered yes and yes, and that's fine. You have firsthand experience with the trap that psychologists call moral licensing, which is an insidious destroyer of willpower. You see, when we assign moral values to our actions, they become fodder for our desire to simply feel good enough about ourselves, even when we are sabotaging our long-term goals or harming others. By being good, we reckon, we earn the right to be a little or a lot bad. For example, if you do your workout, stick to your diet for a day, and pat yourself on the back for how good you were, you might find yourself overeating tomorrow but feeling virtuous, guilt-free, and in control. Interestingly, good behaviors that people use to justify the bad don't even have to be related. Shoppers who pass up something desired are more likely to feel justified in indulging in tempting food. When reminded of their virtue, people donate less to charity. Hell, research shows that when people merely think about doing something good, it increases the likelihood of immoral or indulgent behavior. And, in an even stranger feat of mental acrobatics, when some people imagine what they could have done but didn't, they feel virtuous. They could have eaten the entire cheesecake, but only had one slice. They could have skipped four workouts, but only skipped three. They could have bought the $2,000 suit, but opted for the $700 one instead. Just to illustrate how absurd moral licensing can get, can you figure out why, after adding healthier items to its menus, McDonald's began selling more Big Macs than ever? Yep, the mere opportunity to eat healthily subtly gave people some of the satisfaction of actually doing it, which in turn permitted them to choose the immediate gratification of a cheeseburger. As you can see, once we go searching for moral permission to stray from our goals, it's not hard to drum up some virtue so we can get the green light. For some people, ordering a healthy main dish leads to higher calorie beverages, sides, and desserts. People who buy chocolate and donate it to charity are likely to reward their benevolence with some chocolate of their own. Organic Oreos are perceived to be lower in calories and more suitable for daily consumption than regular Oreos. The great irony of all of this is that in the end, all of these licensed bad behaviors simply prevent people from achieving what really matters: a fit body, a long life, a balanced budget, a completed project shipped out the door, and so forth. They're tricking themselves into believing that squandering their health, finances, time, opportunities, and relationships are treats, that self-sabotage is a reward to be cherished. Who are these people kidding? Only themselves. The moral of this section is that we simply can't trust our feelings to guide our actions. If we wander through life chasing good feelings, we'll figure out plenty of ways to not feel bad about every little bout of procrastination, overeating, overspending, and what have you. And one day we'll wonder why the hell we're so fat, broke, lazy, and ignorant. Escaping from this trap requires that we first stop moralizing our behaviors, that we stop using vague feelings of right and wrong and good and bad to guide our immediate actions. Instead, we need to remember why we've committed to doing the hard things like exercising, following a budget, working overtime, and so on. In terms of diet and exercise, you need to look at both of these things as independent steps necessary to achieving the body you desire, not as good behaviors that you can cash in for indulgences. Successfully sticking to your workout routine doesn't buy the right to cheat on your diet. Remember that the goal isn't a good workout or day of proper eating. It's a radically transformed physique. There are bigger reasons why you're doing all of this, including fitness, health, happiness, confidence, and all the rest. And doing things like binging on pizza and skipping workouts aren't little oopsies that you can erase with justifications. They're threats to those overarching goals. Whenever you're struggling with a willpower challenge, review your whys. What will you get in the end by staying strong? What's the big payoff? Who else will benefit from it? What will your life be like when these things are a reality? Are you willing to delay gratification to get there? To experience some discomfort in the present to have that future? Oh, what the hell? I'm a lazy idiot anyway. What do people tend to do after a minor lapse in a willpower challenge like following a diet? Do they cut their losses, get back on track, and move on? Or do they figure, what the hell, the whole gig is blown, and just go all in on the buffet? Unfortunately, the latter is far more common. For many, the vicious cycle of indulge, regret, and seriously indulge, called the what the hell effect by psychologists, feels inevitable and inescapable. The handful of chips becomes the whole bag. The two little bites of chocolate are followed by a lot more. A glass of wine is the prelude to the bottle, or two. Whenever people confront a setback and say to themselves, I've already messed it up, so what the hell, I might as well have some fun, they've committed themselves to the downward spiral of the what the hell effect. They give in and feel bad. Then, to feel better, they turn to what started the whole mess, which in turn triggers even worse feelings of shame and guilt, which leads to even bigger failures, and on it goes. Well, you're going to make some mistakes along the way. You're going to eat too much at the party or skip a workout that you could have made. As good as I am about keeping all my plates spinning, I slip up sometimes too. There's nothing wrong with us. We're just human like everyone else. What we do next is what really matters. What we definitely don't want to do is get really down on ourselves when we do mess up. Launching into a tirade of self-criticism will only increase feelings of guilt and shame, which will increase the likelihood of us turning to whatever will make us feel good. Back to the cookie jar we go. The tougher, stricter, and more abusive we get with ourselves, the worse we are in the end. Instead, we should show ourselves the same compassion and forgiveness that we would show a friend. This probably sounds counterintuitive to you. Wouldn't this likely excuse us to continue the unwanted behavior? Research says no. Several studies show that being kind to oneself in times of stress and failure is associated with better willpower and self-control. Self-compassion helps us accept responsibility for our actions and move forward, having learned a lesson. Pride is another effective weapon that we can use to overcome our willpower challenges. Research shows that imagining how proud you will be once you've accomplished your goals, who you'll tell, and what their reactions will be can increase your willpower and make you more likely to do what it takes to make those goals a reality. Anticipating the shame and disapproval from others that comes with failure can also help you stay strong in the face of temptation, but it isn't as powerful in this regard as pride. The crystal ball of delusion. One of our favorite ways to abandon our self-control is to justify our sins of the present with planned virtues of the future. For example, research shows that simply planning on exercising later can increase the likelihood of cheating on a diet. This type of thinking not only reeks of moral licensing, but it also introduces another critical flaw into the mix, the assumption that we'll somehow make different decisions in the future than we do today. Today I will eat twice the dessert, but tomorrow I will stick to my diet. Today I will skip my workout, but tomorrow I'll double up. Today I will binge on my favorite TV shows, but I won't watch any more for the rest of the week. We simply give our future selves too much credit, counting on them to be able to do whatever we can't bring ourselves to do now. We're too quick to assume that we'll be more enthusiastic, energetic, willful, diligent, motivated, brave, morally strong, insert virtues ad nauseam, in a couple of days, weeks, or months. Such optimism would be okay if we knew we could actually follow through on it all. But we both know that's not how it goes. When the future finally arrives, that noble, idealized version of ourselves is nowhere to be found, and the demands we face aren't nearly as easy as we told ourselves they would be. What to do then? Put it all off again, of course, hoping that our Savior will rescue us next time. This type of thinking simply burdens our future selves with an impossible load of tasks and responsibilities. As you make your way on the Bigger, Leaner, Stronger program, be on the lookout for the lure of future virtue justifying today's vice. Avoid the trap of viewing future you as some abstract entity whose emotions and desires will be different than present you's. Realize that, when tomorrow comes, the chances of actually following through on what you didn't do earlier are slim. More often than not, you're going to find yourself in the exact same state of mind as previously, and you're going to sell yourself a little further down the river. As you get better at this, you'll be improving what scientists call your future self-continuity, which is your ability to connect future consequences with present actions. High future self-continuity will not only help you get into shape, but it will also improve many other areas of your life as well. You can also use a couple of mental exercises to build your future self-continuity. Research shows that just thinking about the future, not even the rewards per se, can strengthen willpower. Thus, by imagining the future, doing what you need to do, or refraining from doing what you shouldn't do, you can increase the likelihood of your following through. For example, if you're struggling with starting a diet, just imagining shopping and eating differently is enough to make it more real and appealing. Another exercise is writing a letter to your future self about what you think he'll be like, what your hopes for him are, what you're doing for him now that will pay off later, what he might say about your present self, and even what the consequences of your present willpower failures will turn into down the line. FutureMe.org offers a cool little tool for this that allows you to write an email to yourself and choose a future date on which it will be delivered. The final exercise is similar to the others and entails imagining your future self in vivid detail, which has been shown to increase self-control. Explore the consequences of current behaviors, good and bad. What will your future self look like if you don't commit to changing your ways? What are the likely physical, mental, and emotional consequences? Disease, regret, shame, ugliness, depression, and loneliness. Don't hold back. And what if you do change? How will your life look then? How will you look and feel? Will you be proud and thankful? Again, explore the possibilities. Don't fight the urge. Ride the wave. You've just sat down on the couch after a long, tiring day, and your mind begins to wander. Suddenly, a pint of ice cream materializes, and your taste buds snap to attention. No, you think, anything but ice cream. Do not think of ice cream. The commands don't work, though. The harder you try to banish the visions of creamy, fluffy clouds of delight, the more the thought dominates your consciousness and salivary glands. Finally, the only way to make it stop is to spoon the stuff down your gullet. Ironically, however, the experience rarely lives up to the expectations. The problem with this scenario isn't the spark of imagination that started it, but rather the forceful attempt at suppressing it. Research shows that a willingness to think thoughts and feel feelings without having to act on them is an effective method of dealing with a wide variety of challenges, such as mood disorders, food cravings, and addiction. On the other hand, trying to suppress negative thoughts and feelings, like self-criticism, worries, sadness, or cravings, can lead to greater feelings of inadequacy, anxiety, depression, and even overeating. So, when you have disturbing thoughts, face them calmly instead of trying to sweep them under the mental rug. You don't have to believe them or contemplate their meaning. You just have to accept that they're there and be aware of them. Don't read into them. Just play them down. They're not that important and will fade. This is particularly relevant to dieting, as research shows that thought suppression is a very poor dietary strategy. The more you suppress thoughts about food, the more likely you are to struggle with cravings and binge eating. When cravings hit, instead of trying to distract or argue with yourself, notice and accept the feelings. Realize that while you may not always be able to control where your mind wanders, you can always control your actions. And before you act on the desires, remember your goal and why you committed to abstaining in the first place. Ride out the wave of desire until it finally crashes and dissolves. Researchers from the University of Washington called this surfing the urge and found that it helped smokers cut back on daily cigarette smoking. It helped them learn how to handle their feelings internally instead of turning to something external for support. A simple rule of thumb for putting this into use is to wait 10 minutes before acting on a craving or other impulsive urge to do something you know you shouldn't. This not only gives you time to pause and reflect on the matter, but it also takes away the power of immediate gratification and future discounting. By pushing the reward just 10 minutes into the future, you can take away its most effective weapon against your willpower. If you're facing an I will challenge, if you're dreading something you know you need to do, then commit to do it for 10 minutes and then decide whether to continue. Chances are you'll find that once you're in motion, you'll want to keep going. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. It's 6 o'clock, and you've just finished your work for the day. You're feeling drained. Fires were fought, meetings endured, and bosses placated. You're shuffling toward your car, and a sense of dread washes over you as you realize you're supposed to head to the gym now to train legs. Ugh. Before you know it, your mind is racing with reasons to just go home. It'll be a terrible workout anyway. The gym is really full on Mondays. You can make it up next week. You don't skip as much as your friends. The onslaught quickly breaks through your weakened defenses, and you're on to the next decision. Order pizza for dinner or cook a healthy meal. If you order now, you could pick it up on the way home. This experience is all too familiar for many people. They use anything they can, tiredness, soreness, fatigue, or depression, as excuses to skip workouts, cheat on diets, lash out at loved ones, and put off work that's long overdue. Being exhausted is just an easy way for them to feel okay about their failures. Well, just as elite athletes are able to push themselves far beyond the first feelings of physical fatigue, the point where normal people give up, figuring they've reached their limits, we too must learn to push past the barrier of mental and emotional fatigue that can convince us to stray from our routines and goals. This isn't as hard as it might sound either. Research shows that people who simply don't believe that using self-control results in mental fatigue or a weakening of the willpower muscle don't experience the same gradual deterioration in the strength of their willpower seen in those who do. So, in a very real sense, you're as tough as you think you are, and you can exert as much self-control as you think you can. The next time you feel too tired to say, I will or I won't, toughen up and push past it. Challenge yourself to go beyond that point, into discomfort, and you'll likely find you can without consequences. Use it or lose it. How to train your willpower. Modern life bombards us with willpower challenges that require us to call on our self-control mechanisms to successfully avoid distractions and do things we need to do and not do what we shouldn't. The problem with this is research shows that we can, at some point, run out of self-control juice, leaving us susceptible to temptation. Scientists have observed that, regardless of the types of tasks performed, people's self-control is at its highest in the morning and that it steadily declines as the day wears on. Resisting sweets, fighting emotional impulses, keeping distractions at bay, compelling yourself to do difficult tasks, or even making trivial purchase decisions all seem to pull from the same willpower reserve. These findings have given rise to the willpower as a muscle metaphor. It only has so much strength, and every time you flex it, it becomes a little bit weaker. The positive side of the metaphor, however, is that you can train your willpower muscle like a physical one and make it stronger and more resistant to fatigue. Research backs this up, too. We can increase our overall willpower by performing regular small acts of self-control, like eating fewer sweets, tracking spending, correcting our posture, refraining from swearing, squeezing a hand grip every day, and using our non-dominant hand for various tasks. What we're really training when we do these trivial things is what psychologists call the pause and plan response, which involves pausing before we act, noticing what we're about to do, and choosing differently instead. We can use this research to build our own willpower workouts that train our self-control. For example, you can build your I won't power by refraining from slouching when you sit, committing to not eating a junk food indulgence every day, or not swearing. You can build your I will power by committing to some new daily habit like doing 5 minutes of breathing exercises, going for a walk outside, doing 20 push-ups after waking up, finding something that needs cleaning in your house and cleaning it, or tracking something in your life that you don't usually pay attention to, such as how many calories you take in and expend daily, how much coffee you drink, or how much time you spend surfing the internet. You might be surprised by how far these little self-control exercises can go in increasing your ability to make bigger changes in your life, such as adopting a new, healthier lifestyle. Another highly effective way to train your willpower is to use a strategy called pre-commitment, which entails taking action now to strengthen your position and commitment to a behavior and ward off any underhanded attempts at sabotage from future you. For many people, the best way to beat temptation is to simply avoid facing it in the first place. For example, if you have trouble with procrastinating on the internet instead of working, you can download a program called Freedom, www.macfreedom.com, macfreedom.com, that turns off your internet for a set period of time. Antisocial, www.antisocial.cc, antisocial.cc, blocks social networks and email. If sticking to a diet is your struggle, you could pre-commit by throwing out every bit of tempting junk food in the house and not buying it again, bringing a healthy lunch to work every day that you've prepared, or joining a diet bet at dietbetter.com, www.dietbetter.com. If you want to ensure you do your workouts, you could pay for an annual membership at your gym instead of going month to month. Another good tool for pre-commitment is the website Stick, www.stickk.com, which was created by Yale economist Ian Ayers. The site allows you to set a goal and time frame, put money on the line, decide what happens with the money if you fail. It goes to charity, for example, or even to an organization you don't like, which can be a stronger incentive. Designate a referee who will monitor your progress and confirm the truthfulness of your reports, and invite supporters to cheer you on. In short, anything you can do to show that you mean business and to make it difficult and uncomfortable to change your mind and give up is going to help you keep your impulses and feelings at bay and thus keep you on course. Nothing fails like success. Once we've decided on a goal, what do we crave most? Progress, of course. We want to see positive change and forward movement to give us the energy to push even harder. But that's not how it necessarily goes. It turns out that progress comes with a risk, complacency. Research has shown that some people use progress toward a goal as an excuse to let off the gas and indulge in some self-sabotage. When we make progress, we can be lulled by feelings of accomplishment and entitlement. As with moral licensing, we can feel that our one step forward has earned us the privilege of taking two steps back. Instead of patting ourselves on the back and pondering all the progress we've made, which increases the likelihood that we will act contrary to it, we should view our successes as evidence of how important our goals are to us, or of how committed we are to seeing the process through to the end. That is, we should look for a reason to keep going, not to slow down and take in the scenery. The bottom line. Human nature is full of paradoxes, and the subject of self-control is no exception. We're drawn to both delayed and immediate gratification in the forms of long-term goals and temporary jolts of pleasure. We're inherently susceptible to temptation, but have the power to resist. We're constantly juggling feelings of stress, anxiety, fear, and sadness intermingled with calm, hopefulness, and excitement. While I don't think we can fundamentally change ourselves through the strengthening of our willpower, we can certainly improve our ability to meet the demands of daily living with more mindfulness, effectiveness, and confidence. Chapter summary. Introduction. Those with higher levels of willpower, well, they do better in school, earn more money, make better leaders, and are happier, healthier, and less stressed. They have better social and romantic relationships. They can keep their mouths shut, and they even live longer. Your excuse for skipping the gym, again, is remarkably similar to the foodie's justification for binging for the third day in a row. How you talk yourself into putting off that important work just one more day is how someone else eases the guilt of giving in to his cravings for a cigarette. I will, I won't, I want. Most people think of willpower as the ability to say, I won't, but there are two other aspects to it as well. I will power is the other side of the I won't coin. It's the ability to do something when you don't want to, like grinding out the workout when you're tired, paying the overdue bill, or burning the midnight oil on that work project. I want is the ability to remember the why when temptation strikes, the long-term goal and thing you really want more than the fast food or credit card purchase. Your brain on dopamine, why the idea of giving in feels so good. Once you become aware of an opportunity to score a reward, your brain squirts out dopamine to tell us that this indeed is the droid we're looking for. It plays up the sweet song of immediate gratification and plays down any chatter about long-term consequences. When dopamine is released, it also triggers the release of stress hormones that make us feel anxious. This is why the more we think about the reward we want, the more important it becomes to us. The more we think we have to get it now. Ironically, the ultimate rewards we're looking for can elude us every time, but the slimmest possibility of payoff and the anxiety of giving up the quest can keep us hooked, even to the point of obsession. Research shows that the dopamine release triggered by one promise of reward makes us more likely to pursue others. Look at pictures of naked women and you're more likely to make risky financial decisions. Dream about striking it rich, and food can become really appetizing. If we're to succeed in this new world, we must learn to distinguish between the false, distracting, and addicting rewards we're enticed with every day, everywhere we go, and the real rewards that give us true fulfillment and that bring meaning to our lives. The archenemy of willpower, stress. Self-control is for relaxing the muscles, slowing the heart rate, elongating the breaths, and buying some time to think about what we really want to do next. Whereas fight or flight is for speeding us up to react as quickly as possible. Research has conclusively proven that nothing undermines willpower like stress, and not just the stress we feel when our brains are bathed in dopamine, but the stress of everyday living. The more stress we feel, the more likely we are to overeat, overspend, and do the many other things we regret shortly thereafter. Anything that causes stress, whether mental or physical, drains our reserve of willpower and reduces our capacity for self-control. Thus, as a corollary, anything we can do to reduce stress in our lives and improve mood, both acutely and chronically, improves our self-control. An effective way to recover from the stresses of the daily grind is to simply relax. If you want to see this in action, the next time you face a willpower challenge, deliberately slow your breathing down to about 10 to 15 seconds per breath, or 4 to 6 breaths per minute. Research has shown that there are various ways to enter this state of relaxation, such as going for a walk outside, reading, drinking a cup of tea, listening to soothing music, doing yoga, lying down and focusing on breathing and relaxing your muscles, and even gardening. If you sleep too little too regularly, you'll find yourself more susceptible to stress and temptation and lacking the energy reserve needed to keep your good habits in play and your bad habits in check. Research has shown that exposing yourself to a constant barrage of bad news, scare tactics, and morbid reminders of our mortality increases the likelihood of overeating, overspending, and other willpower failures. Research shows that regular exercise reduces cravings for both food and drugs, increases heart rate variability, makes us more resistant to stress and depression, and even optimizes overall brain function. I don't care how, I want it now. When we think about rewards, the longer we have to wait, the less desirable they become. Psychologists call this delay discounting, and the more someone engages in this behavior, the worse his self-control is, and the more likely he is to behave impulsively and even have problems with addiction. When you face a willpower challenge, if you think about the future reward first and how giving in now sacrifices progress toward or some part of it, research shows that you'll be less likely to discount the future and indulge. Let's all get fat and jump off bridges. Extensive psychological and marketing research has shown that what others do, and even what we think they do, has a marked effect on our choices and behaviors, especially when the people we're observing are close to us. When we're not sure how to think or act, we tend to look at how other people think and act and follow along, even if subconsciously. We can pick up anything from temporary solutions to long-term habits this way, and both people we know and even people we see in movies can influence us. Research has demonstrated the contagious nature of habits and mindsets with many other behaviors, including drinking, smoking, using drugs, not getting enough sleep, and even feeling lonely and depressed. Good behaviors and moods are contagious as well. If we hang around or even think about people who are generally goal-driven and happy with high levels of self-control, we too can catch these traits. If you're struggling with sticking to your diet or exercise routine, you can make it easier on yourself by joining forces with someone else who is on the same path and thinking about how others have successfully dealt with these issues. Research shows that reflecting on your goals and how you might be tempted to go astray will strengthen your will and help you turn away from immediate gratification when necessary. Using the good to justify the bad. You see, when we assign moral values to our actions, they become fodder for our desire to simply feel good enough about ourselves, even when we are sabotaging our long-term goals or harming others. By being good, we reckon we earn the right to be a little or a lot bad. If we wander through life chasing good feelings, we'll figure out plenty of ways to not feel bad about every little bout of procrastination, overeating, overspending, and what have you. And one day we'll wonder why the hell we're so fat, broke, lazy, and ignorant. Escaping from this trap requires that we first stop moralizing our behaviors, that we stop using vague feelings of right and wrong and good and bad to guide our immediate actions. Instead, we need to remember why we've committed to doing the hard things like exercising, following a budget, working overtime, and so on. Whenever you're struggling with a willpower challenge, review your whys. Oh, what the hell, I'm a lazy idiot anyway. Whenever people confront a setback and say to themselves, I've already messed it up, so what the hell, I might as well have some fun, they've committed themselves to the downward spiral of the what the hell effect. What we definitely don't want to do is get really down on ourselves when we do mess up, The tougher, stricter, and more abusive we get with ourselves, the worse we are in the end. Instead, we should show ourselves the same compassion and forgiveness that we would show a friend. Several studies show that being kind to oneself in times of stress and failure is associated with better willpower and self-control. Research shows that imagining how proud you will be once you've accomplished your goals, who you'll tell, and what their reactions will be can increase your willpower and make you more likely to do what it takes to make those goals a reality. Anticipating the shame and disapproval from others that comes with failure can also help you stay strong in the face of temptation, but it isn't as powerful in this regard as pride. The crystal ball of delusion. One of our favorite ways to abandon our self-control is to justify our sins of the present with planned virtues of the future. We're too quick to assume that we'll be more enthusiastic, energetic, willful, diligent, motivated, brave, morally strong, insert virtues ad nauseam, in a couple of days, weeks, or months. Research shows that just thinking about the future, not even the rewards per se, can strengthen willpower. For example, if you're struggling with starting a diet, just imagining shopping and eating differently is enough to make it more real and appealing. Another exercise is writing a letter to your future self about what you think he'll be like, what your hopes for him are, what you're doing for him now that will pay off later, what he might say about your present self, and even what the consequences of your present willpower failures will turn into down the line. The final exercise is similar to the others and entails imagining your future self in vivid detail, which has been shown to increase self-control. Don't fight the urge. Ride the wave. Research shows that a willingness to think thoughts and feel feelings without having to act on them is an effective method of dealing with a wide variety of challenges, such as mood disorders, food cravings, and addiction. Trying to suppress negative thoughts and feelings, like self-criticism, worry, sadness, or cravings, can lead to greater feelings of inadequacy, anxiety, depression, and even overeating. When cravings hit, instead of trying to distract or argue with yourself, notice and accept the feelings. Realize that while you may not always be able to control where your mind wanders, you can always control your actions. A simple rule of thumb for putting this into use is to wait 10 minutes before acting on a craving or other impulsive urge to do something you know you shouldn't. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. Research shows that people who simply don't believe that using self-control results in mental fatigue or a weakening of the willpower muscle don't experience the same gradual deterioration in the strength of their willpower seen in those who do. The next time you feel too tired to say I will or I won't, toughen up and push past it. Challenge yourself to go beyond that point, into discomfort, and you'll likely find you can without consequences. Use it or lose it. How to train your willpower. Research shows that we can, at some point, run out of self-control juice, leaving us susceptible to temptation. Resisting sweets, fighting emotional impulses, keeping distractions at bay, compelling yourself to do difficult tasks, or even making trivial purchase decisions all seem to pull from the same willpower reserve. We can increase our overall willpower by performing regular small acts of self-control, like eating fewer sweets, tracking spending, correcting our posture, refraining from swearing, squeezing a hand grip every day, and using our non-dominant hand for various tasks. Another highly effective way to train your willpower is to use a strategy called pre-commitment, which entails taking action now to strengthen your position and commitment to a behavior and ward off any underhanded attempts at sabotage from future you. Nothing fails like success. Research has shown that some people use progress toward a goal as an excuse to let off the gas and indulge in some self-sabotage. Instead of patting ourselves on the back and pondering all the progress we've made, which increases the likelihood that we will act contrary to it, we should view our success as evidence of how important our goals are to us, or of how committed we are to seeing the process through to the end. Chapter 11, The Simple Way to Set Health and Fitness Goals That Will Motivate You. I'm not the kind of guy who tries to run between the drops. Sometimes you gotta get a little wet to reach your destination. Eric Frankhauser. Now that you've gotten a crash course on willpower and self-control and what it really takes to commit to a long-term change, let's take a few minutes to set up a powerful set of goals that will serve as why reminders when temptations strike. People with vague, unrealistic, or uninspiring health or fitness goals, or none at all, are always the first to quit. They're easy to spot, too. They show up randomly and seem to sleepwalk through their workouts, wandering from machine to machine, monotonously going through the motions without even breaking a sweat. Week after week, they complain about how hard it is to gain or lose weight, and they get nowhere. Months can go by without a single noticeable change, if they make it that long. Well, let me assure you that people who have the type of body that you aspire to have specific, realistic health and fitness goals and are driven by them, progressing slowly but surely every day. When they meet one goal, they set another goal to stay motivated. This is what we're going to work out for you in this chapter. Now, different people have different reasons for training. Some just like the game of pushing their bodies past their limits. Others want to look good to impress the opposite or same sex. Others still want to increase their self-confidence or improve their overall health and just feel good. All of these things are good reasons to be fit. Sure, I could give you a nice list of benefits of being in great shape, such as looking great, feeling great, having high energy levels, living longer, being resistant to sickness and disease, and so on. But the important thing is that you work out specifically what fires you up about it. We might as well start with what people usually consider more important, the visual. There's nothing to be ashamed of here. Every person I know who has built an awesome physique was motivated by the looks they wanted as much as anything else, if not more. Of course, there are the over-the-top narcissists who chase aesthetics with little regard for their health, and this often leads to drug use and other harmful habits. But there's nothing wrong with a bit of vanity. Let's face it, looking awesome just makes you feel good. I value my health highly and am not solely driven by how I look in the mirror, but I would be lying if I said I don't care as much about looks as I do the many other benefits of regular exercise. I want to smile when I look in the mirror like everyone else. That's me, though. Let's take a deeper look at what is going to drive you. What does your ideal body look like? The first step in establishing your goals is to determine what your ideal body looks like. Not just in your head, but in reality. You need to find pictures of exactly what you want to look like and save them for motivation. It might seem silly for you to search on the internet for pictures of jacked guys, but it's important that you have an exact visual image of how you want your body to look. Throwing around words like ripped and six-pack to describe your goal isn't nearly as motivating as looking at pictures of real bodies that you're working toward. Unless your goal is to look like a top-tier physique competitor or a hulking professional bodybuilder, which requires an absurd amount of drug use to achieve, this book is going to give you everything you need to get there. But I doubt that's your goal. Most guys just want to be muscular and lean, and everyone can accomplish that by dedicating themselves to it and following the right game plan. A good place to look for ideal body shots is bodybuilding.com's Body Space. I'm also building a little collection of my inspiration on Pinterest, which you can find at www.pinterest.com/MikeBLS, M-I-K-E-B-L-S. So take a break and go find some pictures of how you want to look. What would your ideal state of health be like? Now that you've worked out what you want to look like, let's take a look at the health aspect. Even if looking a certain way is your primary motivation for working out, you'll soon learn that the health benefits are just as motivating. You're going to feel better physically. You're going to have higher energy levels. You're going to get stronger. You're going to be more mentally alert. You're going to have a stronger sex drive and more. In short, your entire life might just change. Thus, I recommend that you also work out a health goal that you find motivating. Mine is along these lines, to have a vital, energetic, strong, and disease-free body that lives long and allows me to stay active and enjoy my life to the fullest. For me, that's just as motivating as looking great. I want to live a long, productive life, feel good, watch my kids grow up, and never suffer from debilitating diseases. I'm sure your health interests are along the same lines, but feel free to work out your individual goals in whatever words best communicate to you and write them down. Why do you want to achieve these goals? All right, now that you've worked out what you want to look like and what level of health you want, the next question is why. What are the reasons for achieving those goals? This is completely personal, so write whatever is most motivating to you. Why do you want to achieve your ideal body? Maybe you want to boost your confidence, play sports better, get better at physically taxing hobbies of yours, get more attention from girls or guys, feel the satisfaction of overcoming physical barriers, participate in physical activities with your kids, hell, beat your friends in arm wrestling matches. Whatever your reasons, just write them all down. And why do you want to achieve your health goal? Does a certain disease run in your family and you want to make sure you never suffer from it? Do you want to be able to stay active well into your retirement years? Slow down the process of aging and retain a youthful vitality? Just have a body that works the way it's supposed to? Again, give this some thought and write everything down. You know you've got it right when you feel pumped up, when you want to get into action and start making these things a reality. Keep your write-up in a safe place and refer back to it regularly. It's a great way to stay excited and on track. The bottom line. By doing these three simple steps, you'll have created a powerful motivation sheet that will always point you in the right direction. When you feel tired and are dreading the gym, you can just look at that sheet and you'll probably change your mind. When you're out with friends, watching them stuff themselves silly while you're eating a moderate, well-balanced meal, you'll know exactly why you're doing it. This is the simple yet powerful formula that I've used to keep myself continually motivated to train and diet for years. My goals have changed over time, but I've always ensured that I knew where I was going and why. Chances are you will greatly benefit by doing the same. Chapter summary. Building a killer physique is not a matter of jumping on the bandwagon of some new fad workout program for a few months. It's a matter of adopting a disciplined, orderly approach to how you handle your body. Anyone who has the type of body that you aspire to has specific, realistic health and fitness goals and is driven by them, progressing slowly but surely every day. The first step of establishing your goals is to determine what your ideal body would look like. Find pictures of exactly what you want to look like and save them for future reference. Work on a health goal that you find motivating as well. What are the reasons for achieving those goals? You know you've got it right when you feel pumped up, when you want to get into action and start making these things a reality. Keep your write-up in a safe place and refer back to it regularly. It's a great way to stay excited and on track. Section 3. Nutrition and Diet. Chapter 12. Going Beyond Clean Eating, the Definitive Guide to Effective Nutrition. There's more to life than training, but training is what puts more in your life. Brooks Kubik. I won't bother repeating a cliche about how important nutrition is when it comes to building muscle and losing fat. Some people say it's 70% of the game, while others say it's 80 or even 90%. Well, I say it's 100%. And lifting heavy, overloading your muscles, that's also 100% of the game. Being properly hydrated is also 100%. Having the right attitude is 100% too. Yeah, we're at 400% so far. My point is this. The building blocks of a great body are more like pillars than puzzle pieces. Weaken one enough, and the whole structure collapses. You can't build any appreciable amount of muscle if you don't train correctly. Your muscles won't grow if you don't give your body proper nutritional support. Performance and thus muscle growth is stunted by dehydration. Your gains will be lackluster if you don't train with the right attitude. That's why I want you to have an all-or-nothing attitude about achieving your fitness goals. I want you to be 100% about each aspect of the Bigger, Leaner, Stronger program and achieve 100% of the potential results. Let the weak and undisciplined give only 60% in their training, 30% in their diet, or 40% in their attitude. They're going to make you look like a god. So then, let's now talk about this vital and confusing for many pillar of muscle growth, nutrition. Your diet either works for or against you, multiplying or dividing your training results. Think of the nutritional aspect of the game as a series of toll booths along the highway of muscle growth. If you don't stop and pay each one, you don't get to go any further. It's that simple. Contrary to what you're constantly told in the magazines, there's a lot more to proper nutrition than slamming down buckets of protein powder every week and loading up on the latest, greatest, advanced muscle-building supplements that clutter the shelves of your local supplement store. Contrary to what leading health experts claim these days, it has much less to do with clean eating than you probably think. It's also much more than eating a couple of good meals per day with some snacks here and there so you don't get hungry. Proper nutrition boils down to just two things. One, supplying your body with the nutrients needed to efficiently recover from your workouts. Two, manipulating your energy intake to lose, maintain, or gain weight as desired. It's that simple. When you know how to accomplish these two targets, you can change your body composition with ease while also being incredibly flexible with your diet. You can eat plenty of carbohydrates and do great. In fact, I'm going to recommend this. You can eat grains and even sugar every day and get shredded. Gasp. You can eat on just about any schedule you like. You can eat large or small meals. The list goes on. What you can't do, however, is supply your body with inadequate nutrients or get the energy balance wrong for your goals. Do either of those things, and you'll flounder no matter what else you do. Now, there are seven aspects of nutrition that are of primary concern when trying to build muscle and lose fat and stay healthy. They are calories, protein, carbohydrates, fats, water, vitamins and minerals, and fiber. As you know, a calorie is a measurement of potential energy in a food, whether it comes from protein, carbohydrate, or fat. Protein, carbohydrates, and fats are macronutrients, and how you structure these in your diet is vitally important to your overall results. Many people are surprised to learn how important drinking enough water is and how much better their bodies feel and perform when they're properly hydrated. Then there are vitamins and minerals, known as micronutrients, that are essential for your body to efficiently perform the many different physiological processes connected with building muscle and losing fat. Last but not least is fiber, which is an indigestible type of carbohydrate found in many types of foods, including fruits, vegetables, legumes, and grains. Fiber is vital for overall health. Let's dive into each of these subjects separately. Calories. You already know the role that calories play in determining the body's energy balance and how this determines fat loss and fat gain. In this section, I want to touch on a few other calorie-related things that you should know. Regardless of the source, 1 gram of protein contains 4 calories, 1 gram of carbohydrate contains 4 calories as well, and 1 gram of fat contains 9 calories. Yes, a gram of carbohydrate found in lettuce contains the same amount of energy as a gram of carbohydrate found in a Snickers bar. This is why so many people fail to lose weight by simply eating clean. They give their bodies an abundance of micronutrients through eating a bunch of nutritious foods, which is great, but they also give it too many calories, which means no weight loss. Another big mistake people often make is they overestimate the number of calories they burn every day and accidentally overeat. Quite a few factors determine the total energy your body burns every day, such as body size, total lean mass, body temperature, the thermic effect of foods, stimulants such as caffeine, and the types and amounts of physical activity. Later in the book, when we break down how to diet properly, I'm going to give you simple dietary formulas for losing fat, building muscle, and maintaining weight that use macronutrient targets. I do, however, want you to know how to calculate approximately how many calories your body burns every day, your TDEE, as you may need to tweak the formulas I give later to your circumstances. We must first calculate our BMR, which is easily accomplished by using the Catch-McArdle formula. Here's how it works. BMR equals 370 plus 21.6 times LBM. LBM refers to lean body mass, and it's in kilograms for this calculation. In case you're not familiar with it, lean body mass refers to the non-fat components of the human body. You calculate LBM by subtracting your body fat weight from your total body weight, giving you the weight of everything but your body fat. Here's how it looks. LBM equals 1 minus body fat percentage expressed as decimal numeral times total body weight. For instance, I'm currently 186 pounds at about 6% body fat. So my LBM is calculated like this. 1 minus 0.06 equals 0.94. 0.94 times 186 equals 175 pounds, LBM. There are 2.2 pounds in a kilogram, so here is the formula to calculate my BMR. 175 divided by 2.2 equals 80 kilograms. 370 plus 21.6 times 80 equals 2,100 calories per day. Once you know your BMR, you can calculate your TDEE by multiplying it as follows. By 1.2 if you exercise 1 to 3 hours per week. By 1.35 if you exercise 4 to 6 hours per week. Or by 1.5 if you exercise vigorously for 6 or more hours per week. The resulting number will be a fairly accurate measurement of the total energy your body burns every day. If you're having trouble getting that down, you can find it laid out in the bonus report that came with the book. Some people prefer to start with BMR and then add calories burned through physical activity, as determined by estimations or an activity tracker. But I find this an unnecessary complication. When we look at the bigger picture, the TDEE calculation method works just as well, and it makes meal planning easy as we can just stick to the same numbers every day. In case you're wondering why those multipliers are lower than the standard Catch-McArdle multipliers and other similar models elsewhere on the internet, it's simply because the standard Catch-McArdle multipliers are too high. Unless you have an abnormally fast metabolism, standard multipliers will overshoot your actual TDEE and cause you to fail to lose weight or gain weight too quickly, depending on what you're trying to accomplish. Now, if math isn't your strong suit and you're a little confused, don't worry. You don't have to even calculate your BMR or TDEE, as I'm going to make dieting simple for you by providing easy macronutrient formulas to follow based on your weight and approximate body fat percentage and goals. I just wanted you to know how to calculate these things, as many people hear about them but don't know what they are or how to properly calculate them. Protein. A high-protein diet is absolutely vital for building muscle and preserving it when you're dieting for fat loss. A low-protein diet is absolutely good for nothing. End of story. One of the easiest ways to get stuck in a rut is to simply not pay attention to how much protein you eat on a day-to-day basis, or miss meals and figure it's no big deal. You see, when you eat food with protein, your body breaks it down into a pool of amino acids, which it can then use to build muscle tissue, among other things. If your diet contains too little protein, your body can become deficient in these essential amino acids, and thus its ability to build and repair muscle tissue becomes impaired. This is true regardless of whether you exercise. The basic processes whereby cells die and are replaced require these essential amino acids. Regular exercise, and weightlifting in particular, increases your body's need for essential amino acids and thus protein. Your body must repair the damage you're causing to muscle fibers, and that requires a lot of building blocks. This is why research has shown that athletes need to eat a high-protein diet to maximize performance. How much protein is enough, you wonder? Let's find out. The protein needs of athletes. According to the Institute of Medicine, 10 to 35% of our daily calories should come from protein. That's not helpful for us, though, because 10 to 35% is quite a range to choose from. Even if we go with 35%, if our daily calorie intake is too low, we won't get enough protein, and if it's too high, we'll get more than we need. So, to find a more definitive answer, let's look at some of the clinical research available on the matter, starting with research conducted by scientists at McMaster University. According to their work, protein intake of 1.3 to 1.8 grams per kilogram of body weight, 0.6 to 0.8 grams per pound of body weight, is adequate for stimulating maximal protein synthesis. They note, however, that more protein might be needed in the case of frequent and/or high-intensity training, and in the case of dieting to lose fat, restricting calories. A widely cited study conducted by researchers from the University of Western Ontario concluded the same. 1.6 to 1.8 grams per kilogram of body weight might be enough for athletes, but higher intakes may also be warranted depending on a variety of factors, including energy intake, carbohydrate availability, exercise intensity, duration, and type. dietary protein quality, training history, gender, age, timing of nutrient intake, and more. As you can see, the topic is complex, and there may not be a one-size-fits-all solution. That said, the anecdotal evidence of gym lore can lend some insight here, and it agrees with the above findings. 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, 2.2 grams per kilogram of body weight per day has been a bodybuilding rule of thumb for decades. Higher levels of protein intake, usually in the range of 1.2 to 1.5 grams per pound of body weight, 2.6 to 3.3 grams per kilogram of body weight per day are commonly recommended when dieting to lose fat. If those numbers sound high to you, consider these findings from research published in 2013 by researchers from the Auckland University of Technology. Protein needs for energy-restricted, resistance-trained athletes are likely 2.3 to 3.1 grams per kilogram of FFM, 1 to 1.4 grams per pound of fat-free mass, scaled upwards with severity of caloric restriction and leanness. Fat-free mass, by the way, refers to the non-fat components of the human body, such as skeletal muscle, bone, and water. Technically, fat-free mass differs from lean body mass because there is some essential fat in the marrow of your bones and internal organs. Thus, lean body mass includes a small percentage of essential fat. Practically speaking, however, we can treat them the same and calculate fat-free mass in the same way as we calculated lean body mass. In my case, my fat-free mass is currently 167 pounds. So, according to the research cited above, if I were to restrict my calories for fat loss purposes, I should eat anywhere from 170 to 240 grams of protein per day. Well, I found this to be true, not only with my body, but also with the thousands of people I've worked with. As you get leaner, keeping your protein intake high becomes very important. If it drops too low, below 1 gram per pound of body weight, in my experience, the loss of strength and muscle is noticeably accelerated. So that's it for the amount of protein you should eat. And again, don't worry about trying to remember everything I talked about here, as I'm going to give you some simple dietary guidelines to follow when it comes time to create your meal plan. At this point, all you need to do is understand the research and reasoning behind the guidelines. With that out of the way, let's now move on to the best types of protein for our purposes. The best sources of protein. There are 2 main sources of protein, whole food protein and supplement protein. Whole food protein is, as you guessed, protein that comes from natural food sources, such as beef, chicken, fish, plants, and the like. As you can imagine, not all protein is metabolized in the same way. Different proteins digest at different speeds, and